May 13th, 2017, New Vrindavan, scheduling and prioritizing.
Okay, so this is really a very practical seminar. It's about how can I find the time for a high-quality relationship with Krishna in a distracted life filled with so much to do. And as I mentioned yesterday morning, that I really feel personally that one of the main things we need to do in order to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world is to teach people how to be Krishna conscious in their regular life. The concept that becoming a devotee of Krishna and joining ISKCON means you drop out of school, you drop out of work, you leave your family, you give away your car, you move into the ashram, which is what I did. That old video, that old ISKCON video, where Rupa Dutta, who was at that time a sannyasi, he's here at this sannyas pose in his nun, and he said, "You do not have to leave your family and leave your work," and I'm thinking, but you did. Anyway, so I think those days are gone for most people. And in any case, if we really want to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, we have to show people how can I be Krishna conscious while I live a life in the world. While I'm part of the world, and as we mentioned yesterday, Krishna wants people to work in the world, yes? We were talking yesterday about seeing our life as service, seeing everything in our life as service. So Krishna would be completely happy if one of us was president of the United States instead of our current president, no matter how much you may love him. Maybe somebody here loves him, I don't know, but I'm sure that if one of us was president, that Krishna would be much happier. And the same is true for everything. You know, if devotees were running Walmart, if devotees were running Monsanto, if devotees were running everything. So that's going to please Krishna. Krishna's not looking for everybody to live in a cave in the Himalayas. That's not, and especially if we're going to speak of Krishna as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu definitely has this mood of bringing Krishna consciousness to the world. So especially these seminars we're giving this weekend are aimed at this. So if any of you here find that these don't apply particularly to your life, because you're already living in cave in the Himalayas and you don't have these problems, then I'm hoping that you can use this information also to help the people that you are guiding. And as we said yesterday, we're looking at these different features yesterday and today, not tomorrow, in terms of six of the eight parts of Ashtanga Yoga. And what we're looking at today is going to deal with Yam Niyam, with Pratyahara, with Dharana, with Dhyana, and with Samadhi. The one we're doing this afternoon is just dealing with Dhyana and Samadhi. So the one we're doing at 4 o'clock is how we can be in Samadhi other than at our sadhana time. So this morning is particularly focusing on sadhana. Well, that's what we're really looking at in this session. How can I have high quality time with Krishna in a busy life? In other words, how can I make time for my sadhana, and how can my sadhana be high quality even when I have so many other things going on in my life? And this afternoon, we're going to look at how can I have that absorption in Krishna when it's not sadhana time. Everybody understand? Okay? And tomorrow morning at 10:30, we're giving a little different seminar, a little related. It's about surrender, the six symptoms of surrender, the two angas of bhakti that deal with surrender. The seminar tomorrow is going to be much more of a meditation on how we can surrender to Krishna. We're going to have songs and all kinds of things like that. Okay? And for those of you who weren't here yesterday, these seminars today are interactive. They are workshops, fun shops. And so there are going to be things for you to do. Of course, you're welcome just to sit here and try to be entertained, but I think that you'll get much more out of it if you actually participate. And again, if any of you don't have a handout or paper or a writing implement, the handouts are there. We're expecting you to use that in this class. All right, well, anybody who's hung around the Krishna consciousness movement for any length of time knows that we are told that the early morning is the best time for sadhana. Does anybody know why that is? Ram Mahurtaba, why?
Sattva guna,
and also I ended up studying Ayurveda a bit as a Gurukul teacher, because some of my students wanted to learn Ayurveda. And there is evidently a time early in the morning when the modes are all in equilibrium. They're in equilibrium. None of them are dominant at all. They're all in equilibrium, and then there's a time in Sattva guna. And it's very interesting. I spent a lot of time in New York City. I grew up there. I also spent a lot of time in London. And both New York and London are supposed to be cities that never sleep. Now, it is true that at 11 p.m. and 11 a.m., the only difference is the amount of sunlight in the sky. Otherwise, the cities are basically identical in terms of traffic, foot traffic, car traffic. But there is a time when those cities sleep, each of those cities. Guess what time of the day those cities are sleeping?
3 a.m.
It's about 4, 3:34 until about 5:30. So when we used to live on 57th Street, and I'd write 2 blocks from the old 55th Street Temple, when we'd be walking to Mangalarti, there'd be no cars. And no people. The only people that were out on the streets were the drunks. You know, people were intoxicated going home and usually singing very loudly something that wasn't kirtan. And the sex workers going home. So those were the only two people on the streets. It was basically empty. And a few cars. One time we saw a car, obviously driven by a very intoxicated person, just in an empty street, smash into a parked car and back off and drive away. But I noticed this also in London when I say the Soho Street Temple, those hours, it's just empty. So why is that? It's because there's really not an effect of passion ignorance. And the people who are in passion ignorance, they can't function when the modes are in goodness. They're not deriving any energy from the atmosphere. You understand? It doesn't. Their own personal energy and the energy in the environment don't match. And so they just can't function. The only thing they can do is sleep. Does everybody understand this? Yes? They don't have to deal with this energy. And that is the ideal time for sadhana. It's something like, you know, if you want to travel, those are good hours to travel because the roads are empty and you can just zoom to your destination, right? As I travel the world, I always have to figure out how long it's going to take me to get to an airport. Well, it depends. We were driving to the airport in Delhi from Vrindavan, and we were in rush hour traffic. And I don't know how many of you have been to Delhi lately, but between Vrindavan and Delhi, there's a place where there's no kidding, we counted them, 20 lanes. 20 lanes. Even in Southern California, you will not find 20 lanes. 20 lanes. And they were all bumper to bumper. All of them. I think my granddaughter took a photograph of it. So, you know, certain times, bless you, certain times it's very difficult to get to where you want to go. Right? And other times it's very easy. So the early morning is a time when meditation on Krishna is very easy. And we all notice if you try to start meditating on Krishna at 7 in the morning, 8 in the morning, the duties of the world kind of rush in on you, isn't it? And you start feeling like, I have things to do. Whereas in the early morning, somehow there's this few hours when you don't feel, I have things to do. And there's a number of, I haven't read them, but I know that they're out, a number of books and courses encouraging people, use your early morning. Use that time for meditation, for exercise, for, you know, that's really the time when you can do that kind of thing. Knowing that, however, some of us may not be taking advantage of that time. Some of us may be sleeping. Another time that Srila Prabhupada mentions for sadhana is the evening. And there's many times where he'll say, especially for householders, morning or evening. And of course, in the early days of ISKCON, we all had our ISKCON sandwich. So we had our morning sadhana, then we did service all day, and then we gathered together again in the evening. We had a kirtan and a shastra class, and then we would drink hot milk and read Krishna book. Any of you really old timers remember that, Marsha? And then you go to bed and hope that you dreamt about a Krishna book. So unfortunately, for many of us, those early morning hours and those evening hours are being taken up by other things. So we're just going to look at what are some of our problems. One problem is late nights. Right? Staying up too late. And then you can't get up in the morning.
That's me at work.
That's your work. You know, one of the things about Facebook is you can often tell who's up at 1 in the morning. Going to work really early. Now, I had this circumstance when I was working as an assistant principal in a public school. I had to be there at 7:20 in the morning. And there are people who have to be at work at 6 in the morning. And there are people who have to, you know, they have to be going to work in order to beat the rush hour, etc. They're going to work at 5:30, 6 in the morning. That's not uncommon. And as I travel, I often stay at people's homes. Sometimes I stay in Tamil Ashram. Sometimes I stay at people's homes. And what I find is, if it's a family devoted to home-cooked meals, then the woman is in the kitchen from 4:30 in the morning, cooking for the husband and children. And I see this many places that I go. People are waking up at 4 or 5, but the woman's going right to that kitchen. And she's in the kitchen until the husband goes to work and the kids go to school, and she doesn't even start her day until like 8 in the morning. And then if she also goes to work, then all she's had time to do is cook and go to work. Right? Cook, get the kids ready. Right? And even this one home I stayed at where they had a servant come in at 5:30 in the morning. Servant came in every morning at 5:30 to cut the vegetables and help the housewife cook. And still it was like, all right, where's your shoes? Do you have your homework? Right? Get a shower, hurry up. And the husband was like, do you have my breakfast ready? And it was just some really quick puja for the deities. Yeah. The husband was like, okay, wake up. Here's something to eat. Okay, bye, get to work. You know, the wife's in the kitchen and the guy's cutting up the vegetables. Get in the shower! Now, I thought of it this morning, and so it was too late for me to make it part of this show. But if you go to YouTube and you look up William Tell Overture, Mommy, and it's great. It's about 2 minutes long, and it's this woman doing a monologue of what a mother is saying to her kids to the William Tell Overture. Like, get up, get out of it! You know, you're just going through the whole day and frantic like that. And then we may go to work.
Actually, what was that? William?
William Tell Overture? Oh. Mother or Mommy. You should find it. That is fantastic. And then at work. You know, we may have a job that has very long hours. Also, sometimes when I was working as an assistant principal, sometimes I had 14-hour days. I had to get to work at 7:20. I didn't leave till 9:30. After school, there was this meeting and that meeting and this thing and that thing and the other thing. And I was there for 14. And it's not uncommon that people with commute time, you know, they may be gone for many hours, and even if it's not many hours, a lot of people's jobs are very stressful and exhausting. Right? And then at the end of the day, they kind of feel like this. Right? And then if that's not bad enough, then you get home and you got a million things to do at home. Or even if you don't work and you're home, you know, you're a stay-at-home parent, and then there's also, you know, a million things to do. The house is falling apart, the kids, hopefully not that bad, you know, the kids need this thing and that thing, and there's meals to cook and there's dishes to wash, and it never ends. It never ends. You know, they say a man works from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. But even, you know, if you're a man and you do the home repairs, that's never done also. Right? Honey, I finally fixed that door. Oh, great. Now that you're working on the door, would you also fix? Yeah. I remember my oldest son was sitting down to play some games with the kids, and his wife said, You know, what about all the things that need to be fixed? And he said, my dear wife, I could be fixing stuff 24 hours a day. It never ends. Right? And sometimes we may feel that this is our life. Oh, and then we're just exhausted, mentally exhausted, physically exhausted. Shh, you know, I need some downtime. I need to relax. You know, let me just turn on the TV or put in the DVD or let me just browse the internet. Let me just space out. Well, then I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to fit Krishna into my life? We kind of feel that our life looks like this. All right, so we're going to look at mindset. Okay, the next few things I'm going to go over are a little heavy. So if you weren't prepared for something a little heavy, you can pick up your phone and pretend the Queen of England is calling you. You have a very important phone call to take out of the room. This next section of the seminar is going to be a little intense, okay? But it'll be okay. It'll be okay. We're going to get through it, we're going to get out the other side, and you're going to end up with a lot of really practical things that you can do and a lot of plans that you can do for your life, okay? But if you can't take heaviness, and you need to leave right now because it gets a little heavy. Alright, so the first thing we want to think is how much of our life is being taken up with just things that are being done by the animals. I mean, one of the main reasons that I decided I wanted to take up spiritual life is I thought, I don't want to be a rabbit, but I thought, I don't want to be a rabbit. I don't want to just have a little burrow and children and, you know. And that's my whole life. I wanted to do something more than just surviving. I wanted to do something more than just surviving. And when we're so busy with all these things, then it's like, I really don't have time for my spiritual life. Now, some of you may say, well, you know, it doesn't apply to me. I don't have a house, I don't have a job, I don't have a family. But even sometimes, those of us doing full-time service in temples can have the same kind of problem. You know, we just feel like we're rushing from one thing to another, to another, to another, to another, to another, to another. And we're so busy in service that we forget, who am I doing the service for? And I've seen even in temples, that you can be so busy that you don't have time for high-quality personal sadhana. Now, and a lot of people with families and jobs think, oh, if only I could just live in an ashram. If only I could be one of those traveling sannyasis. And you're like, do you really want to chant your mantras on an airplane? So, you know, it may not always be just if I don't have all those things going on. You know, there may be so many other pressures in our life. So we can have the still busyness problem. All right, why don't we get some perspective on this? So here's a nice obituary. Just take a minute and read that obituary. Exercise right now. I'd like all of you, and I did tell you it's going to be heavy, right? So I'd like all of you to take your writing implement and your piece of paper, and please write down what would other people write as your obituary If you were to die today, what would other people write as your obituary? It's got to be short, not longer than what you see up here. How would other people summarize your life if you were to die today? Okay, if you can take a minute to read this one, please. Now I'd like you to write, again, a short obituary, if you died today, as Krishna would write it. How would Krishna write your obituary if you died today? Again, very short, just a few sentences. Okay. So you might have come across this before, that a palliative care nurse, palliative care means care you're giving to someone who's pretty much certain they're going to die, and all you're trying to do is make them comfortable and have as high a quality of life at the end of their life as you can. She compiled a list of the five most common regrets that people have at the end of life. And I had a very interesting experience. I got to spend the last 3 weeks of my mother's life, about 13 hours a day, 12, 13 hours a day, by your grace. Thank you very much. With my mother in the nursing home at the end of her life. And one of the very interesting things that I noticed was how people felt about their life and what was really important to them in their life at the end. And also how little people even remembered of their life. So many of the people there couldn't even remember things about their life. I remember this one woman who was in a wheelchair. Whenever I would go past her, she'd grab onto me and try to talk to me. And at one point I said to her, you know, are you married? Do you have a husband? And she'd go, yes. No. Do I have it? And I said, how many children do you have? And she said, three. Two. Three. I think three. And it really made me think about, you know, what we do in this life. That we think is so, you know, the main things that we think are important in this life. I saw a lot of people there where their lives were basically gone. You know, I mean, even for my mother, well, what did he really leave with? Well, she'd been a beauty queen. She had traveled all over the world after winning a beauty contest. But now she looked like somebody who'd come out of a concentration camp. You know, she was very wealthy, but now she was just living in this little room with one rocking chair, one box of clothes. You know, she was a very influential person, but it was just me and her there, you know, very charitable person. There were just plaques on the wall, thank you for your charity. And what did she have? It was really very, very moving to me. So the regrets that people have at the end of life, first one is, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. And this nurse writes, this was the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and look back clearly on it, it is easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people have not honored even a half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to choices they had made or not made. Now, I think a lot of this molding ourselves according to other people's expectations have to do with what we talked about yesterday, which was identity. You know, that I have to spend my life being a good son, a good daughter, a good husband, a wife, this, that, instead of I am Krishna's servant. I'm a part and parcel of Krishna, I'm Krishna's servant. And we're fulfilling all these expectations that other people have of us. And are other people satisfied? No. It's a point Srila Prabhupada makes over and over and over. He says, you know, the man's ready to take sannyas, and he said, I served the family for 40 years, and I'm ready to take sannyas. And she says, what did you do? What service did you do? And we know how unappreciated we often are, isn't it? You know, you work really, really hard, you really sacrifice for somebody, and they don't even notice it. Yes? They don't even notice that you sacrifice. we often give ourselves for other people's expectations and other people's identification of ourselves, and we jeopardize what we really care about, and other people don't even notice. Or sometimes we get criticized for the very things we're doing to help people. Does this happen to anyone else?
Yes. Yes.
You know, you're giving so much to others, and you get criticized for that thing. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. And she said that the elderly patient she was working with generally was the man who was the worker. And she said, every single man said this. So anyone who had a full-time job, any man and any woman who had a full-time job, they all said this. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. Now this is also how we tend to think, okay, well, you know, I can't really say what I feel because other people might be upset and that causes this problem. And of course, there's ways to express your feelings and ways not to express your feelings. It's not that any way to express your feelings is positive. And that's an art, to learn how to express your feelings in a way that nurtures relationships instead of damages them. But this is again about authenticity. About really being authentic. I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. We talked yesterday about one of the main ways of dealing with Maya is Sadhusanga, association. How much do I really keep up with my friends, especially with the other devotees? I wish that I'd let myself be happier. Prabhupada says, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But it seems that for many of us, we need permission to be happy. So we mentioned this yesterday, my apologies for those of you who were here yesterday, that recently I was in a place where we were doing parenting seminars. This was, I think, in Mauritius. And one of the participants said, how can I make Krishna consciousness fun for my children? And I said, if it's not fun, it's not Krishna conscious. Because Krishna's a 15-year-old boy and he's always having fun. So if you're not having fun, you're not conscious of Krishna. I don't know who you're conscious of, but it's not Krishna. So if we're actually devotees of Krishna and actually Krishna conscious, then we should have a life full of fun and happiness. And I think sometimes, even as devotees, we think, you know, if I'm having fun, it must be sense gratification. Can't have any fun. Okay, so let's say a doctor told you today that you have 2 weeks to live. Would you have any regrets about how you've spent your time and energy? Okay? So please write down, if a doctor told you 2 weeks to live and you don't have the energy to go running around and do 10,000 things, it's pretty much you're done. Would you have any regrets about how you spent your time and energy? Would you want to look back and say, hey, I wish I had spent my time and energy differently? So if you could write that down. Okay, we're going to watch now a very short video. It's nicer if I can do this in person. As I said, it would be nicer if I could actually physically demonstrate that, but I wasn't together enough to do that. But you can try this at home. Get a container, have sand and pebbles and rocks, and see if you put the big rocks in first, and then the pebbles, and then the sand, that you'll get a lot more in than if you put the sand in first, and then the pebbles, and then the rocks. And, you know, many of us think, well, let me get all these other things out of the way. Let me get all these other things out of the way, and then I'll have time for Krishna. After I finished everything else, then I'll spend time with Krishna. But spend time with Krishna first. And then you may say, but then I might not get everything done. That's true. And that's okay. It's okay. You know, we did that little obituary exercise. Our whole life, when we die, our whole life is going to be reduced to a couple sentences or a couple paragraphs. our whole life. You know, if you're a really big devotee in the Hare Krishna movement, you will get 2 paragraphs of Bhaktivedanta. If you're really, really big devotee, we'll give you 2,500 words for your whole life. I mean, even if you've got a biography, you know, 300 pages, you think that's really going to cover your whole life? Who cares? All these things we think are so important, and we're putting before Krishna. Who cares? You do a little experiment today. Find somebody who really loves you and cares about you and say, hey, can I talk to you for 2 hours about everything that I did yesterday? Who cares? All these things we're doing. Really, do we even care? I mean, suppose you made a record of every single thing you did. I remember one time my son-in-law was asking me to do stuff. We were running a Gurukul together. And I said, I got no time. And he said, I don't know. Make a list of what you're doing. So I kept track for 2 weeks of everything I was doing, like in 15-minute intervals. And he looked at me and said, you didn't write it on any time. But how many, you know, do we even care? Would I want to go back and read that? If I made that every day, what was I? Would I even care? I mean, I keep a diary, not every day. But I don't go back and read it all the time. I hardly even care. The people who love me don't even care. I mean, it's kind of humbling, isn't it? Just since like I post regularly on Facebook, and all my kids are my friends on Facebook, but they'll ask me things like, where are you, Mother? Where am I? I posted it on Facebook. Oh, yeah, I don't have time to look at Facebook. My own children don't even know where I am. You understand? And my kids, they love me. They do, I hope so. And I ask this all over the world. How many of you know all the names of your great-great-grandparents? How many of you know all the names of your great-great... Look at that, nobody. Out of every 5,000 people, maybe one. That means our great-great-grandchildren will not know our names. That's the grandchildren of your grandchildren. It's not that far from now. Any of you who have grandchildren, you know, I've got now one married grandchild. And I'm thinking, wow, her grandchildren will not know my name. Oh, they'll know my name. Probably not. I mean, sometimes my grandkids ask me, Grandma, what was your mother's name again? That's just our name. That's not what we did. Who we were. What was our personality? What were all the important things I did on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock so I couldn't chant Hare Krishna? Nobody's going to care. Nobody cares. It's so important I have to get to them. When I had a physical inbox instead of an electronic inbox, you know, you put all these things in the inbox you have to do, and every couple months I go through the inbox, and then always be something that expired. And I realized it didn't matter. Life somehow went on just because I didn't get this done or that done or the other thing done. You know, another thing that I realized is you can't do everything to the very top possible level of quality that's theoretically possible in the universe. You know, I cannot clean my house so that it looks like it was just built yesterday and make a 20-course gourmet meal, and wash, dry, and iron all the clothes, and homeschool 3 children as if they had gone to Princeton, and read 5 chapters in the Bhagavatam, and chant 103 rounds. I can't do that. And you know, some things are just not going to get done. And some things are going to get just done. You understand? Some things are not going to get done. And some things are just, okay, it's done. All right, so we're going to look at practical scheduling and prioritizing things. And then we're going to look at quality. So right now we're going to look at quantity and scheduling. And then we're going to look at quality of sadhana. We don't have time today to look at quality of sadhana in all the depth that we could. But I'm hoping that will give you some ideas, and then we're going to end up with making a plan. So Srila Prabhupada says that we should work 8 hours a day. Excellent. That we should work 8 hours a day. Excellent. Work is like work to earn a living. That our work to earn a living should be 8 hours a day maximum. And for a lot of people, that's a big challenge. But I think what this means for some people is lower your standard of living. And, you know, we have to think about it. If I'm working so many hours, how do I even know what my standard of living is? Because I never spend any time in my house or with my family anyway. Srila Prabhupada said in India, he once was talking to a family where the father would leave for work before the child woke up and he'd get back after the child was asleep. And Prabhupada said he was right there when the three-year-old saw his father and said to his mother, "Mommy, who is that man?" You know, I know a devotee who was working like 80 hours a week. And I said, "Why are you working so hard?" He said, "For my family." I said, "Your family doesn't even know who you are." It's like, so what are we working so hard for? Status, money. So maybe you have to live more simply. But perhaps you'll actually have a higher quality of life. Quality of life does not just mean a Jaguar and a BMW and flat screen TV in every room and a pedigree dog. And those are not the only markers of a high quality of life. So, you know, and I know a lot of people say, well, husband has to work 10 hours, wife has to work 10 hours. We were looking at a video the other day that one of the main markers of whether or not people are healthy with what they eat is whether or not the food is cooked at home. The people who eat commercially prepared food are not eating as well. Why? Because commercially prepared food has way too much fat, way too much salt, way too much sugar. It's engineered by food scientists to make you crave it. And that people cooking at home are practically never going to cook that way. This expert was saying that poor women who cook at home will have healthier families than rich women who don't cook at home. So you have, you know, the wife's going out to work all day, 10, 12 hours, the husband's working 10, 12 hours, and everybody's just eating, you know, potato chips, right? And candy and all this sort of junk. And they never see each other. And what are you working for? So, better, I mean, and I know that there's some communities who really, really push. I mean, I've had Indians tell me that there's less stress in America than in India. They tell me off in India, the families are more pushing. Sometimes it's devotees who push other devotees like this also. I was once in one country where there were a number of devotees in a particular professional field. And they said, "Oh yeah, we used to be in another country. We used to work for a devotee business in our profession. So wasn't that better? Why did you want to come to this country and just, you know, work out in the world?" They said, "Well, when we work for the devotees, they'd say, this isn't just your job, this is your service. And we expect you to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day." They said, "We had no time for our sadhana, we had no time for our family, we had no time for preaching." So this concept that, you know, work for the work. Now, I want to introduce a concept which I think some of you may find a little radical, but hopefully very helpful. And this is something that I learned, interestingly enough, when I became a Gurukul teacher. When I first became a Gurukul teacher, I went and took a seminar by an organization called Career Track. And in those 8 hours, I learned something that helped me so much, and I'm hoping that you can also benefit from this. And the first principle they taught us was, it's not time, it's energy. We often think it's time. It's not time. When I had that job as an assistant principal, on a normal day I was getting home at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, but I was getting home with my energy depleted. So though I might have had another 3, 4, 5 hours before I went to bed, they weren't particularly good hours. You understand what I'm saying? I couldn't do much with those hours. They weren't very useful hours. So it's not just time. If you think, "Oh, maybe this much time to this, this much time to this, this much time to this," it's energy. Now, some of you may be blessed with practically unlimited energy. Maybe some of you have incredible health and incredible energy, and no matter how much you get done in a day, you never run out of energy. But for most of us, we have some energy allotment per day. And this is true even if you're only 15 years old. You know, you have a certain energy allotment per day. So what they suggested that we do is mentally figure out how much energy, again, this is not time, it's energy, how much energy you want to give to different parts of your life. So, you know, we say, okay, in the morning I wake up and I've got a pie. Some people do this with spoons. I don't know why spoons. If any of you have heard of that. So they'll get out, like, they'll put out like 30 spoons and they'll say, okay, this represents how much energy I have today, and I'm going to give, you know, 2 spoons to this and 3 spoons to this and 5 spoons to this. So I think, okay, how much energy do I have today? I want to give a certain amount of energy to my japa. Okay, how much energy am I going to give to my japa? Maybe I'm going to give 10% of my energy to my japa. Can you give 100% of your energy to your japa? No. You cannot give 100% of your energy to your japa. Unless you don't sleep. And you don't eat. And you don't bathe. Okay, you understand? Alright, then I'm going to say, okay, how much energy am I going to give to, you know, cleaning and taking care of things in the house? And maybe I'm going to give on a regular day, maybe I'm going to give 15%. And then how much am I going to give if I have some service to do, so maybe, or work, so maybe I'm going to give. I know this is not mathematically good, Ruth, maybe don't give me a hard time. She's a mathematician. So maybe I'm going to give, you know, 30% of my energy to that. And you decide how much energy you're going to allocate to each of different things in your life. And at first when I did this, I would have to do it mentally each day. And after a while, it became kind of automatic. And once you decide I'm going to allocate this much energy to this much energy to that, then the next thing that you do is when you're doing that thing, you give it 100% of that percent. You understand?
Yes.
If you said, I'm going to give 10% of my total energy today to my japa, then when you're chanting japa, you give 100% of that 10%.
Yes.
But you don't give more. Okay, I'm going to give, you know, 10% of my energy to cooking. So you can give 10%, you give that fully, but you don't give more. So if 10% of your energy means dal, rice, kapatis, and sabji, okay. If 10% means khichdi, okay. If 10% means for you samosas and pakoras and chutney and cheesecake and jug. No, but that's how much you allocate. You understand? Everybody's clear with this? And when you're doing it, you just focus on that. Those of you who were here yesterday, about service. Do you remember that beautiful quote from Srila Prabhupada, Jayapataka Swami? Right? Whatever is meant to be that I am doing, I do it with full attention to every detail, and you just focus on that, and all other considerations are forgotten. Wow, did this help me? It meant that when I was chanting my japa, I didn't have to worry about my family, I didn't have to worry about, if you have a little child running around, obviously you have to include them in your attention. I didn't have to worry about my family. I didn't have to worry about my service. I didn't have to worry about cooking. I didn't have to worry about this. I didn't have to worry about... I could just give that to my japa because I knew that I had energy left over to deal with that at its proper time. Now, one thing I've noticed, interestingly enough, is when I chant all my 16 rounds in the morning, I'm more tired at night. Do you know why? Does anybody have any idea why? Exactly. If I know that I have rounds that I still have to finish later in the day, I'm reserving energy for those. Everybody understand? Yeah? So if in the morning I just complete 12 rounds, then part of that energy I put aside for japa, I've kept in reserve. So I can have something in the... Otherwise, what happens in the evening? Are you... Krishna? Right? Yes? Now, you might say, what about emergencies? You know, hopefully your life is not full of emergencies. If your life is full of emergencies, you really need to restructure your life. There's something radically wrong with your life. Life should not be full of constant emergencies. So they do happen. Emergencies happen that mess everything up and throw everything off kilter. That happens. But that should be a rare thing. It should be something that happens maybe 3 or 4 times a year, not 3 or 4 times a week. Does this kind of make sense to everybody? Now, this may also be done not necessarily on a daily basis, but also on a weekly basis. So when I was in the householder ashram and I had a house, then one of the things I had to do was clean the house. So I had one day a week where I allotted a big chunk of energy for cleaning the house. One day a week when I allotted a big chunk of energy for shopping. Is that clear?
Yes.
So at certain days there might be a different program. It might not be the same thing basically every day. And once you kind of get this, you know, first you have to work on it, but once you kind of get it, then you have it. And then you get kind of the sense of how much energy I can give. And it really helps you to give yourself fully, as Prabhupada was saying in that beautiful letter, to give yourself fully to whatever you're doing at that moment. Yes?
How do you figure out what your 10% is if you're not using time as a parameter?
That's a very good question. And it takes a little introspection and a little working with it. But you first try to be aware of how much energy do I have. And this may change also as you get older. For most of us, it changes as we get older. I had a big drop off of daily energy at about age 53, for example. So it may change over your lifespan. But you should get some idea of what is my normal energy output if I'm, you know, not unusually sick or something like that. So just, you can start to become aware of this. Start noticing. What does it feel like? And you get a sense of, wait, what happens when I give too much of my energy to this or that? Because that's the real problem with scheduling and prioritizing. It's not time. It's when I'm giving too much of my energy to something, which then is stealing my energy from other things. Everybody follow what I'm saying? And just play with it a little bit. I found it took me about a week or two of working with this before I really had a good grasp, and I became consciously aware of how much energy I was expending on different tasks and what it would do to me. So I started to become aware, okay, if I go in the kitchen and I make cheesecake and samosas and chutney and 2 kinds of rice and 2 kinds of vegetables and salad, and then I probably don't have much left for reading the Bhagavatam. Okay? You know, I get that sense about it. And you know, if I want to do that on some days, then I have to not do something else that day. I can't say, okay, I'm going to cook a super gourmet meal today and still get everything else done.
Make a list of to-do things and you think about it from a perspective of time, as in this task is going to take this much time, then you know that you can quantify. And so let's say for cooking, I know that
it's not time.
So
like as a Grahastha, my husband always wanted Dharaj to Pali Sabji, so it's practically what I made every day, and I could do it in my sleep. It didn't take much of my energy to make dal, rice, chapati, and sabji. I mean, I make a little bit different kind of dal, a little bit different kind of rice, a little bit different kind of sabji. But it was like automatic pilot. That didn't take much energy. But I knew ekadasi took double the energy. Which is ironic, of course, but that's a whole other discussion. But, you know, if I was, when I'm going to deviate from that, all of a sudden I had to plan the menu, I had to see what was there, and I had to think of, can I make this, and can I make that. So it's energy. Answering emails takes very little energy if they're just, can you meet me tomorrow at 10 o'clock? But if it's some, you know, why did you do this, and this is terrible, and now you're going to lose your job, and the level of energy to deal with that kind of email is very different.
Yeah.
Yes, you understand? So just like I get some emails that are very, very simple. And then I get some, like I got an email the other day, I'm legally married for 3 years, we haven't had a fire yet. I had an affair with somebody and my husband doesn't know, should I tell him before the yagya? Seriously, it just happens in the morning. That's kind of a low energy reply. You follow? If somebody just sends me an email, hey, could you send me that file you talked about in your class on Tuesday, blah, 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 that's a low energy reply. It doesn't take much energy to do that. I don't require much mental or emotional energy to do that. So I could spend a half an hour on email and it take only 2% of my energy, or I could spend a half an hour on email and it takes 20% of my energy. It depends what the content of the email is like. So that's why I'm saying it's not time. What kind of work you do is going to determine how much what your energy output is. Is it an easy job? Is it a very demanding job? It's not time. Time, if you just work with time, it's going to be very deceptive. You're going to say, well, I got 3 hours in the day for sadhana. Why can't I get it done? But it may be 3 hours where you don't have any energy to give. Yes?
When we engage in some particular devotion, it really energizes us.
Oh, I like this point. Some activities give energy rather than take energy. At least mental and emotional. So there are certain things we do which after we've done them, we're so energized that if it's time to go to bed, we can't go to bed. Right? So there's certain things that enliven us so much. And by the way, certain people energize us. There are certain people who are energy drains, certain people are energy givers. I was very lucky. I got to travel for about a year with one of my granddaughters. Many of you were here last year for Festival Inspiration. She was with me. And one thing I realized about her very quickly is that she was an energy giver. That when I was around her, that I had more energy. It was like I said, this is your gift. Everybody has a gift. And I said, your gift is that you're an energy giver. He said, you're just naturally, just by being in the room, you energize people around you. So that's also true, that there's some things that we can do which they really don't, I mean, they may take our physical energy and so we have to go to sleep at night, we have to eat. But there are certain things we do that are so enlivening that we're not so much giving, we're actually getting. Yes?
From my experience, I also can see that the same thing can take less or more energy, depending how I'm doing it, the same activity.
That's also true, same activity. And how you're doing it, meaning the detail with which you do it and the consciousness with which you do it.
And I can do it in a peaceful way, I can do it getting myself wound up.
Yes, yes. I'm repeating in case somebody can hear something. You can do it peacefully or you can get it wound up. So that's also very important. And sometimes we unnecessarily exhaust ourselves. And then, you know, I also got a message from one devotee. I don't have time to chant because from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. I'm go, 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 go all day. I said, why are you go, 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 go all day from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m.? Why are you choosing to do that? To just, you know, expend. Yes?
I wonder about finding a way to balance the humility of being able to tell people that things aren't going to get done. That's something that I have a husband and a daughter, and there are certain things that certainly aren't going to get done when we're putting our energies into 5 puzzle pieces on a Tuesday versus 7 on a Wednesday. So do you have suggestions on how to explain living this way to people who are obviously not, because that's what makes everyone in this room different from everyone who's down the street?
What I do say to people is, you know, that's really important. And I really like to do that for you. And I just don't think I can do it today. I'm really sorry. You know, I would do it if I could. It's really, really important, and I apologize that I can't do it. You know, Srila Prabhupada also said that the highest principle is to save others, and higher than that is to save yourself. And sometimes I say to people, look, if I don't take care of myself, I'm not going to be any good for you. You got to put your own oxygen mask on first. And you can apologize. You can say, look, I'm really sorry. I know how important this is to you. I mean, one of the things I did in my life, which I feel sad about, but at the same time I needed to do it. I was in Slovenia, and I had been teaching all day. I was exhausted. It was 8:30 at night, and I still had 2 rounds to chant. And I went in my room just, you know, I had only maybe like 2% of my energy left, 1%, 0.5, I don't know, hardly anything to finish those 2 pounds. I thought, I'm going to just, that's all I'm going to be able to do, and then I'm going to collapse. And I got, you know, I was a husband and wife who traveled by train for hours just to see me. And they had to leave early the next morning. And I said, what did I say? I said no. I said no. And I still feel sad that I said no. And I said, I'm really sorry. Prabhupada says, the highest principle is to save others, and higher than that is to save yourself. If you don't save yourself, you're not going to be any good for anybody else. And then sometimes you have to say to people, look, I really would like to do this for you, but I have to take care of myself. I have to make sure I'm a sane, balanced, happy person. Do you want me to be an insane, unbalanced, unhappy person?
But it's so hard to be balanced. That's the way I feel. Because, like, the responsibilities of the family, the rules of education.
Responsibility. Well, this comes down to what is my identity. Who am I? Who am I trying to please?
What are you going to answer when you get the bill for the university? And you don't have the money and you only want to work 8 hours a day?
And you may have to change your standard of living.
Or a different university.
Or a different university. What I have found in my own life and with helping so many people is that if we make the right choices for the right reason, we get taken care of. And even if sometimes the cost is temporarily high, it works out. That's what I've discovered. If I make the right choices for the right reason, Krishna helps me. He really helps me. Does that mean I've always had plenty? No, you know, not always. I mean, there was a time in Detroit when my husband said, Arila, can you count how much money is in your wallet? And between the two of us, we had 73 cents. So we had a kid in school, in Gurukul, we had to pay for. We had a 3-year-old and I was pregnant. I mean, 73 cents. We were living about 20-minute drive from the temple, and he said, we're not driving to Mangalarti. What do you mean we're not driving to Mangalarti? I'm such a fanatic, oh my God. he said, we can't afford to pay for the gas. Yeah, but somehow we lived. 6 months later, we bought a house. Hard. He was in Detroit, so it didn't cost that much, but still. I mean, seriously, you know, I see Krishna takes care, and sometimes, you know, I've lived in closets, literally. I mean, literally, closets. I lived for 10 months in the Boston Temple in a closet. My husband sanded the floor for me, so. And he put in an exhaust fan. It was a closet. But, you know, I'm living. I'm here I am. Do I look famished? I'm okay. I told you my mantra yesterday, right? In the end, it'll all be okay. If it's not okay, it's not the end. And it really will be okay, you know, if I make the right decisions for the right reasons. We'll get taken care of. Does that mean I'll get taken care of exactly the way I want, exactly how I want, exactly when I want? Probably not. You know? And then you also look at life as an adventure and say, all right, how's this 15-year-old boy who runs the universe? It's an interesting concept. You have a 15-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl running the whole show. You have a little interesting idea of God. So, what are they going to do next? It's going to be an adventure. Maybe you'll do the right thing for the right reason and Indra floods your town. Isn't this our understanding of God? Yes? Did you sign up for the wrong religion? We will worship God who will just pave our road with gold if we say Gloria to Him at least once a day. It doesn't work that way in any religion. But we understand that God is very youthful and he's very playful. And maybe you walk into the mouth of a gusara. Maybe you drink the poison water of the Yamuna. We'll sing a song about that tomorrow morning. That's where we're going, everybody. If you don't want to go there, you probably should leave now. Because that's where we're going. We're going into Lila. We're going into adventure. And we can live our life now as if we're going into adventure. We can live our life now as if we're part of the Lila, because we are. We're part of Mahaprabhu's Lila. If we choose to see things that way. And by the way, is there security anyway if I run my own life according to my own calculations? Does that work? Anybody successful with that one? What do they call financial investment securities? How does that work? So I planned out my whole life. Okay, this time it's going to happen, this time it's going to happen, this time it's going to happen. Anybody fully successful with that one? And even if you are, you might not like it. Right? I like to give this example. One of my professors, when he was 19, another professor came along, he was at that time just a teacher, and said, here's a plan where you can be a school superintendent by the time you're 33. It usually takes to you like 55 or something. And he thought, yes, I'm going to do it. And he followed that plan exactly. And he became a school superintendent at 33. And he found he hated being a school superintendent. His wife hated him even more and divorced him. And he thought, I don't like being a school superintendent. I really like being a teacher. And then he became a college professor. So sometimes, even if our life works out exactly according to our plan, it wasn't a good plan. Yes? Does it take some faith to live like this? Yeah. But it's so much more fun. Don't try to balance everything. It really isn't about balance. You want to be in balance, that's the Brahman. The Brahman's just in balance. Yes. Nothing ever happens here. Everything is in equilibrium all the time. You practically don't even know you exist. Now, if you really want that, it is available. It is an option. Okay? It's on the menu. If you want it, it's available. But what Mahaprabhu is giving us is something that he says is a lot higher, and that is adventure. It's Leela. We don't know what's going to happen. Who likes a story where you know exactly what's going to happen? What do they call that? If somebody tells you what's going to happen, they call that a spoiler. Think about that for a minute. So, you know, my life is also like that. If I know exactly how it's going to happen, if I do this, it's going to happen. If I do, spoil, it's all spoiled. It's all ruined. So don't look for balance. Don't look for balance.
So
look for adventure. Look for excitement. Look for connection. How can I be connected with Krishna? How can I be part of his adventure? How can I be part of his story? How can I make him smile every minute of the day? How can I have the right intentions to do the right thing for Krishna's alone pleasure be my motive, as we read yesterday? How can I do that? That's what we're looking for. Some things will not get done, and some people will be fried with us if they don't get done. You know what? That's going to happen if you're not a devotee. Okay? It's going to happen if you are the most successful, together, amazing, organized materialist. Some things are not going to get done, and people are going to be fried with you if they're not done. And some things are not going to get done to a high level of quality, and people are going to be fried with you. And some things you're going to work so hard, and they're going to be perfect, and people are going to hate it. I thought you liked this meal. Why did you think that? Sorry, I didn't answer your question. Okay, if you could just take a few minutes, and you may modify this later, but if you could just make a little pie chart, however you want to do it, about how much of your energy would you like to allot to different things on a normal day? If you don't have a normal day, then pick something that's, if such things don't exist for you, if every day is radically different from every other day, as much as you can approximate. So how much energy you'd like to allocate to different areas of your life on as close as you can get to a typical day for yourself. And now we're going to look at how we are going to do our sadhana outside of the temple. So we have a nice quote here. This is some Shudhakirti, where Prabhupada said that when he was a householder, he would chant 4 rounds before each meal and 4 rounds before retiring in the evening. In this way, 16 rounds can be chanted without any difficulty. He laughed and said, if you don't take prasad before chanting your 4 rounds, then you will be sure to get them chanted. Now, it's very interesting. When we ran a school in Detroit, we required that the children attend Mangal Arati at the temple. If they didn't come to Mangal Arati at the temple, they couldn't go to school that day. And when we started a school in North Carolina, when we presented that, the family said, no, we don't want to do that. And I said, well, I want the children to have a morning sadhana. And they said, can we do it at home? Can we have the option to either the temple or at home? And feeling that I was compromising my standards, I said yes. But I discovered something. I discovered that if you only train people to have sadhana at a temple, when they move away from the temple, they often don't have any sadhana. Because they think, I have to have sadhana like at the temple. I have to have, 4:30 in the morning till 9 o'clock in the morning. And if I can't do that, I can't do anything, because they don't have any other standard. And I found that the children who were trained, that sometimes they came to the temple, sometimes they had sadhana at home, were far more likely to continue with sadhana as an independent adult. And it really surprised me. I thought, wow, this is actually a better system. We can't necessarily copy-paste a monastic sadhana program into a life with work and school and so forth. It may be adjusted according to your particular circumstance. So I really advise people to be creative and flexible. There's the creative and there's the flexible. And when I was going to graduate school, I had so much reading to do. I had at least 150 to 200 pages of very dense, very difficult, and often very boring reading to do every week. Plus a lot of papers to write. I had to write usually 5 papers a week, at least 5 pages each, so at least 25 pages a week. And it didn't leave me a whole lot of time for reading Srila Prabhupada's books. I'd always spend many hours a day reading Srila Prabhupada's books and other books by our acharyas. I just didn't have time. My reading time was all taken up. So I thought, what am I going to do? So I still did a little reading every day, but I started relying more on audiobooks. So when I cleaned, when I cooked, when I ironed, I listened to audiobooks. And I've always used a lot of audiobooks in the Gurukula. Like every day at lunch, we would play an audiobook. So the kids would gradually hear Krishna book, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I know one devotee who has a job that requires a lot of driving, and he memorized the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita by listening to it in the car. I know another devotee, while getting her PhD, when she'd walk from one class to another, she would listen to Bhagavad Gita. And she's memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita, purports and everything. Just from, 3-4 years of listening to it over and over and over and over and over again. My dear friends, we are all so lucky that we know English. Yes. All of Srila Prabhupada's books are available as audiobooks in English. And also many, many of the books of our acharyas, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, etc., are available as audiobooks in English. If you lived in Czech Republic, you'd be out of luck. Seriously. My friend Mahalakshmi from Spain is here. And she said to me, I love to translate, I love to work with Prabhupada's books, what should I do? I said, make Spanish audiobooks. Read Bhagavad Gita in Spanish and make an audiobook for the Spanish-speaking people. There's very, very little available for people who speak other languages. But for English, it's just everything is there. So you can also hear the books. There's also other ways you can study the books. When I was in New Zealand for a ladies' retreat many years ago, they asked me to give a seminar on how to study Prabhupada's books. So I don't know if they were happy with this or not, but what I did was I put all the ladies in a circle. I said, I'm not going to tell you anything. You each tell me what you do. And it was so enlivening. You know, one person made poems out of the purports. Another person did question and answers out of the verses and purports and put it on her blog. Another person looked at the Sanskrit and found other verses with the same Sanskrit and what they meant. Another person liked to study in a group. You know, everybody had a different way that they were approaching reading, that they were approaching studying. Be creative. Be creative. Creative as far as time. Do I have my main sadhana in the morning or the evening? Now maybe I break it up. When do I chant? If you have children, how many of you have children? Okay, so there's a propaganda right now in the Hare Krishna movement that children are terrible for your sadhana. I don't know where this started or whatever. It's like, don't have children and don't bring them. Your sadhana will be finished. So Kamali and I were talking about this morning, how, you know, we used to bring our kids to the morning program in the temple. Yeah? I don't know. This way, it wasn't as a Gurukul teacher for 17 years, I brought up to 30 children to the morning program in the temple. We just didn't see our children as an impediment. So I'm going to tell you a little secret. Having children can be absolutely the best thing for your sadhana if you look at it differently from a monk. So there's very few services where you can just talk about Krishna and Krishna's form and Krishna's pastimes for hours every day. I wish we could. I wish we could go up to the adults. Some people do this. After one of my Manashiksha seminars, one of the adults came up to me and said, Ramila, have you heard the news? I'm like, what's that? He said, Nanda Maharaj was swallowed by a snake when he was celebrating Shivaratri. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But generally, we don't do that. You know, I kind of wish we did, but usually we don't. We don't go up to the other adults and say, the cowboy boy's been swallowed by a gust, so what are we going to do? But you can do that with kids. You really can. Prabhupada said the children should play as if Krishna was right there with them. I think we can do that also as adults, but we usually kind of don't. I don't know if I'm going to do that. But, you know, you can do that with kids. You can say, okay, let's run in the Vrindavan forest. There's Krishna, there's Balaram. And you can just sit down and read stories about Krishna. And no one's going to say, you know, aren't you going to do some practical service for them? So it's really, really nice. And there's all these songs about Krishna. Yes? You know all these songs about Krishna? And I feel so fortunate that I spent 5 years as a nursery school teacher because I learned all these songs. And that can be part of your sadhana. You know, there's songs of the whole Krishna book. And, you know, they're cooking in the kitchen. You can go, it is the evening, Krishna and Balaram along with the boys and returning to Vrindavan playing their flutes. You know, and you'd be singing all these songs. I mean, your kids, it's really nice. So think of how to have your sadhana with your kids. When you have a morning program with your kids can sometimes give the class. They can lead the kirtan. Right? No one's going to criticize them. They can offer the arti. Involve them. You know, have something that involves them, not just, oh, sleep, so I can do my sadhana. You know, try to involve your children in your sadhana. You know, be creative. Instead of seeing my job, my spouse, my kids are just impediments to my Krishna consciousness. If I was actually Krishna conscious, I would be in a cave in that moment. You know, instead of thinking like that, think of how can this enhance my Krishna consciousness? Get out of the monastic box. My dear friends, if we don't get out of the monastic box, we ain't going to have an international society for Krishna consciousness. We're going to have international Krishna consciousness, but we're not going to have an international society for Krishna consciousness. It won't happen. And the real key to preaching all over the world, in my humble opinion, is not whether or not we serve pizza, And it's not whether or not, you know, we wear blue jeans. I really don't think that's the main thing. I mean, I'm sure it matters to some people, but I really think the main thing is to say, here's how you do it. Here's how you have a spouse and kids, and here's how you be a banker, and here's how you go to school and be Krishna conscious. Here's how you do sadhana in the world. But you have to be creative. Don't copy-paste. And you don't, not only that, you don't want to copy-paste from someone else's situation. If someone says, you know, well, the way I do my sadhana with my family is we do this, and we do this, and we do this, and you look at that and go, oh my God, that's so intimidating. I had a very interesting experience some years ago. I was given a Shalagram Shila by Orkeshwar Prabhu, if you know Orkeshwar Prabhu. And he said, okay, if you're going to worship this Shalagram, I'm going to give you the whole worship procedure. So he gave me the worship procedure, and I went, can I be honest? He said, I'm not going to do this. And he said, okay, I have another one. I was so surprised. I said, you have another one? He said, yeah, there's another one. Let me send you that one. And I got that one. I said, this is a lot better, but I'm still not going to do it. And he said, well, I have another one. I said, there's another one? Well, if you know Gorkeshwar, he's one of the world's experts in Arjuna. And he said, yeah, this is what Bhakti Vinod. Wow, really? So he sent it to me. I said, this is almost perfect. He says, we'll customize it for you. I said, you can do that? Yeah. He said, it's an art, it's not a science. You're dealing with a person. And I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's personal. Right. Yeah. And I ended up with a puja procedure that I really love and really added qualitatively to my life. So don't copy-paste. Now, find a sadhana program that's going to work for you, that's going to be enlivening for you. Maybe that means every morning you go to a local temple. Maybe it means once a week you go to a local temple. Maybe it means once a week you get together with friends at their house or your house. Now, what times of the day? What are you going to emphasize? And also different points in the life cycle. Okay, exactly how I do my sadhana, my dear friends, has changed a lot. From when I was a brahmachari living in ashram, to when I was married without kids, to when I was married with young kids, to as a vanaprastha, to as a traveling vanaprastha. It's changed. You understand? And this is also going to change over your life cycle. It's not that, well, I can't do my sadhana exactly how I did when I was 20. But maybe you shouldn't even be. Maybe it should be adjusting. Okay. That's kind of looking at the technical aspects. Now we're going to look at quality and taste. Look at these wonderful quotes here. Let's read this together. According to the regulated principles, there are 9 departmental activities as described above. I want to specifically engage himself in the type of devotional service for which he has a natural aptitude. What are the 9? Okay. And going on in that purport, let's read this together. For example, one person may have a particular interest in hearing, another may have a particular interest in chanting, and another may have a particular interest in serving in the temple. Going on. So these are any of the other 6 different types of devotional service: remembering, serving, praying, engaging in some particular service, being a friendly relationship, or offering everything in one's possession, should be executed in full earnestness. Going on. In this way, everyone should act according to his particular taste. Well, well, well. A personalistic philosophy. Think of that. Applied practically in our lives. Not that someday when I'm in Goloka Vrindavan, I'll realize that I'm an individual person. But for right now, I am a robot. Right now, right here, of course we have the basics, which Srila Prabhupada gave for everybody 16 rounds, studying the Shastra, etc. There's sort of the basic. Over and above the basic, what is your taste? What do you love? What energizes you? My dear friends, you're far more likely to do sadhana if you really enjoy it. What a radical idea. And you're far more likely to really enjoy it if you make sure that your daily sadhana includes something that you really like. Daily, and also weekly, monthly. What do you really like? Do you love decorating with flowers? One time a devotee came to me a month in and said, "Oh, well, you know, I just never read Prabhupada's books." I said, "Why not?" And she said, "Well, I'm told I first have to read Bhagavad Gita, then I have to read the whole Bhagavatam, then I have to read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita." And she said, "I don't like Bhagavad Gita. So I don't read anything." And I said, "Is there a book you like?" She said, "I love the Nectar Devotion." I said, "Read that." She said, "But I'm not allowed to." I said, "She's not reading anything. Do what you love. There's something in devotional service that you love, do that. Make a little time for it. You know, even if it's just 5 minutes a day, if there's something you love, do that. And then you're looking forward to it, and you're thinking, wow, when am I going to have time to do my 5 minutes of bhajan? You know, whatever it might be, when am I going to have time to write some prayers to Krishna, write some poetry for Krishna? When am I going to have time to polish the silver? Something that you love, that you're doing regularly as part of your sadhana. Make sure that's included. Don't have your sadhana be dry. We all have our particular taste. All you have to do is think of, you know, what do I love? Now, if you say, well, what I really love is traveling to India during Kartik and going on a pilgrimage with 8,000 people, then maybe it's a little difficult to do every day, but maybe you could watch a video of it. You understand? Something. I was staying at a devotee's house in Queens a couple years ago, and every morning the man went to Mangalarti in Mayapur. And what was really funny is he'd never physically been to Mayapur. I said, "Have you ever been to India?" "No." But he went to Mangalarti in Mayapur every morning. Isn't that wonderful? I love that about Kali Yuga. I really do. You know, whatever it may be. If you love preaching, hey, you know, you can preach over Skype. You can preach in a podcast. You don't need somebody to make a grand arrangement for you to preach. "Well, I gotta wait until they invite me here." You just do it. Make it part of your daily routine. And then you're like, "Wow, when am I gonna get to do that?" And then it won't be, "Oh, okay, how can I schedule Krishna into my day? Oh my God." I mean, one devotee told me, initiated devotee, said, "You know, I stopped doing my sadhana because it became just another thing on my to-do list." So you don't want your sadhana to be like that. Okay. Didn't you just take a minute, you can write it down, and I'll just think for a minute, what do I like to do for Krishna? Write it down and just think, what do I Now, something magical happens also. When you're doing something regularly for Krishna that you like to do, that happiness spills over into the other things. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes? So the things that you don't have that much of a taste for, the taste you're getting from that one thing that you're doing regularly starts affecting everything else. But let's look now at our basic sadhana and making that really tasty. So you all have a handout, yes, about chanting? So I'd like if you could, some of you have been stealing little reads of this here and there in the seminar, but if you could just take a few minutes and read over your email. So you didn't finish, you can finish later. What are your reactions and responses to this? Anybody reactions, responses? Yes. Or I can just also just repeat. You said Prabhupada made it so simple. Okay, very nice. Any other reactions to this? Yes.
Some people say you shouldn't think of Krishna.
Some people say you shouldn't think of Krishna when you chant. I find that one of the most bizarre instructions.
I was just in my course.
I know.
Some devotee was giving his class and he was saying how they should try to think of Krishna. And that one was like, "I'm not one of those people."
Like, yeah. Okay, so Rupa Goswami says, when should we think of Krishna?
Always.
Always, except when you chant, right? I doesn't make any sense. Now, you will find there was one conversation Prabhupada had with one gentleman who said, when I chant, what should I do with my mind? And Prabhupada said, just chant it here. What's the question of mind? Somehow that one conversation in some people's thinking got elevated above all the purports and the lectures and all the other instructions as if it was some overriding principle. And my conclusion is Prabhupada was responding to one particular person and giving an instruction that was appropriate to that person. So what you notice is when Prabhupada says just here, it's always the second tier. He'll say, feel the presence of Krishna, think of Krishna. If you can't do that, just hear me. It's a second best. And eventually, after doing that, you'll be able to think of Krishna. One of the quotes there, you notice the Prabhupada says, if you're not remembering Krishna's pastimes when you're chanting, it's inattentive and you're deficient in your Krishna consciousness. So our japa is supposed, and our kirtan is our meditation. That is supposed to be our meditation time. That's supposed to be our intense thinking of Krishna time. Yes?
I feel like sometimes with that quote, people fall into this mindset where when you are in this deep meditative state, you should be, your mind should be silent. But, I mean, in Krishna consciousness, there is no silence. There is only Krishna, right? So, like,
yes. Yes, it's not just silence, it is Krishna. I mean, I do have a seminar on the stages of meditation from the Nectar of Instruction, text 8, and we also look at, it's also in Jaya Dharma, Harinam Chintamani, it's in Jiva Goswami Sundaras. And there is a point at which meditation is not on the platform of the mind. So, you know, if we're afraid to use our mind in meditation, well, then we're going to have a problem with some Bhagavad Gita verses. What Bhagavad Gita verses are we going to have a problem with? Where does Krishna say to use the mind? How often Bhagavad Gita is that said? How many times?
Twice.
And the second time is said at what part of the Bhagavad Gita?
The end.
The end. Any of you know anything about teaching? If you repeat something, it must be important. And if you put it at the end in the summary, it must be important. Use your mind. And one of the most often quoted verses of Srila Prabhupada, Maya Shaktam Mana Prata. Yeah, so using the mind, now it does come to a point where we don't use the mind. Jiva Goswami says that the Lord enters into our meditation on the path of the mind. So what happens is when we use our mind to think of Krishna, are we going to think of Krishna perfectly with our mind? No. Is there going to be some distortion? Yes. Is there going to be some mixture of something material? Yes. That's why you don't want to do it. But what happens when you make that attempt? Who gets interested? Krishna. He says, oh, you're trying to think of me. Otherwise, you're saying, I can't think about Krishna until I'm pure. Then what's going to make you pure? How are you going to become pure? What is the bhakti process? How do we become pure? By thinking of Krishna. That is, Prabhupada says, Nectar Devotion, chapter 2, that sadhana bhakti begins with, what do you think he says? Thinking of Krishna. That's the beginning of sadhana bhakti. If we're not thinking of Krishna, guess what? It's not sadhana bhakti. At least we have to be trying to think of Krishna. We should be practicing to think of Krishna. And as we try to think of Krishna and practice to think of Krishna with our mind, Krishna says, oh, you're trying to think of me. And then guess what he does?
He helps
you. And ultimately, how is he going to help you? He's going to show up. We do this too, my dear friends, don't we? Who do we visit? Do we visit people who never think of us? Not usually. Now, does their thinking of you become you? No, their thinking of you attracts you. You understand? Their thinking of you attracts you. So on the higher platform, Krishna and his devotees and the spiritual world manifest in our consciousness. It's not that our mental ideas become Krishna. But Krishna manifests there. He says, okay, here I am. Basically, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, it's like we're installing a deity of sound. Do you all understand what I'm saying? Yes? Like the deity is made of stone or wood or something. things, but we ask the Lord to be present there. Now, the holy name is not quite like that. It's more like Shalagram that's already Krishna. But we're still, you take a Shalagram and you invite the Shalagram into your house and you say, okay, and I'm going to worship you. You understand? With the idea that you will gain realization that Krishna is there. So the holy name is like that. Bhagavad Gita 284, 285, Bhagavatam 284, 285. It says that the holy name manifests in the heart on the lotus of our feeling of affection. So it's a question of chanting with affection. And chanting with affection means I'm thinking about the person that I'm talking to, really talking to Krishna. Could you imagine talking, actually you don't have to imagine, I'm sure we've all done it, talking to another person in this world but not thinking about them? Have you ever done that? Has anyone ever done that to you? Especially now with computers, it's very easy.
Sometimes in many seminars, they say just focus on the sound, don't think, don't let your mind run. This, I have attended a couple of
times. I have also heard that. Which is why I distribute these quotes as widely as I possibly can. I'm trying to flood the Hare Krishna world with these quotes. I think it's one of the most damaging things that we've done to our devotees. This is right at the top of the list of how we've damaged our devotees. Now, I met a devotee once who said, you know, so-and-so Swami came here and he said, don't think of Krishna while you are chanting. She said, I don't know what to do. My job has become really dry. And I said, well, what did you used to do? She said, well, as soon as I chanted, all of a sudden, you know, I would just have pictures of Krishna and Balaram running through the forest and then over down the hill. But now every time, you know, those come, I just push them away. And I said, but you're, you know, when you're chanting, you're saying, Krishna, please come, Krishna, please come. He says, I'm here. No, go away, I'm sorry, I'm not here enough, get out of here. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just absurd. Poor Krishna. Yes, imagine how he feels. How would you feel? How would you feel? Someone's calling you. They're calling your name. They're calling your name. I want to be with you. I want to serve you. I want to be with you. I want to serve you. Okay. No, no, not now. Not while I'm talking to you, okay? It's another time. And I also say to people, can't you chant in front of the deities? You notice a lot of quotes from Prabhupada said, you're seeing the deities, why can't you think of them when you're chanting? So in kirtan, do we close our eyes? I cannot look at Radha Vrindavan Chandra while I'm chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Do you ever chant japa in the temple room in front of the deities? But somehow you can't have the deities in your mind? That's not cool. The Prabhupada specifically says to do that. He says you're seeing the deity so you can remember the deity when you're chanting. And I don't know if I included it here. Prabhupada said George Harrison should be looking at a picture. Did I include that there?
Yes.
There's another quote I'm pretty sure I didn't include there, to Alice Coltrane, where she said, how do I meditate? And he said, look at a picture of Krishna while you're chanting. Yeah. But I mean, I had one ISKCON temple president write me and some other people some years ago and say, the devotees in our temple room were looking at pictures of Krishna while they're chanting. We want to stop this process. I said, well, do you have pictures of Krishna up in your temple room that you can just tell them to take pictures? So that's our idea, is that. Now, that should come naturally. It should come naturally. It shouldn't be, okay, now I am going to think of Krishna. You know? Bhakti is not a mechanical process. It's a personal process. And one thing I want you to look at with these quotes about chanting is this should apply to everything. When I'm reading the Shastra, I'm reading about a person and persons. I shouldn't be reading just for information. Now maybe, you know, if this is your first month in Krishna consciousness, that's there to some extent, but I shouldn't be reading just for information. My purpose of hearing the Shastra is to get to know the people. I'm trying to get to know who is Krishna, who is Radharani, who is Mother Yasoda, who is Subal, who is Arjuna. Who's Maharaj Pratun? What are they like? One of the most wonderful devotees I ever met, an elderly lady who had run a whole medical center in her career. She was retired. And she had been sick for a couple of years, where all she could do was basically lie in bed, chant Hare Krishna, and read Bhagavatam. And when I met her, she was telling me Bhagavatam stories, and she was ecstatic about all of them. She was saying, "And Arjuna, you know that story with Achyamuni? I was standing on one leg, and I was like, wow, she's ecstatic about Achyamuni." She would just start crying, and I'm like, to get to know the people in the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? Somebody asked me yesterday, you know, I like to watch comedy, what should I do? I said, read the Nectar Devotion. I just read today about the lazy Baba. That's an ecstasy, okay? Laziness. Yeah, well, the Brahmanas at Govardhan Puja. They just said, oh, we don't want to walk around and go around here. We just want to offer benedictions. It's an ecstasy. So Rukmini was saying we're going to start a lazy Baba sect. We just offer you benedictions. But that's funny. There's all these funny stories in the Nectar Devotion about all these different kinds of ecstasies and the activities of the devotees. It's wonderful. So that's how we should read. And what should we do in the kirtan? Should we meditate on what we're chanting? You know, not just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. We're talking to a person and meditating on that person. And in our puja like that also. You know, if we're doing worship at home, our deities or our picture, they're not just our food karma stamping out machine. As a person. Talk to them. Seriously, really. I know people who, you know, regularly tell their deities all their finances. I know people who read all of their emails to their deities and read all their replies to their... You can't do that with my emails, I've got too many of them. But, you know, I know people who do that. They read all their incoming and outgoing mail to their deities. Talk to them. Make sure they have a nice, clean place. Make sure they have fresh flowers. Prabhupada would get angry with old, dead flowers. It's a person. Thank you. It's, wow, Krishna's here. He's actually here. And then everything becomes tasty. These quotes here about japa, it's not just about japa. Bhakti is not... We're in bhakti. We're not in jnana yoga, karma yoga, jnana. We're in bhakti yoga. So everything should be tasty. All right. We're going to finish up with a plan. I promised I'd end at 1:15. So everybody has time to chant Gayatri. We don't have a whole lot of time for this. But I'd like you to take one area where something we've discussed in this class, where you'd like to make a change. And I'm going to give you the formula for plans that are very likely to work. Now, those of you who were yesterday, we gave a formula with vowels, right? How many of you were here yesterday and we discussed about that? Okay, good. So that's very, very helpful. I'm not going to repeat that now, I don't have time. But that's a very, very helpful procedure if you want to make some change. I'm going to go now through the kind of the template. So first is state things in the positive. So instead of, I'm not going to space out when I chant japa, what are you going to do instead? Okay, so it should be, what positive thing am I going to do? Does everybody understand this? Okay, it should be stated in positive. Very, very, very important. If you don't do that, the rest of this doesn't work. The next thing, it should be under personal control. If your plan is, you know, I'm going to have a whole set of time for an hour with my whole family every morning, that may not be completely under your personal control. What you could make a plan is, I'm going to sit down with my family on Monday and try to work out a plan to have set of time. You understand the difference? Does everyone understand the difference? If I say, I am going to have, we are going to have family sadhana, you can't decide that by yourself. So that's not under your personal control. But what is under your personal control is you could discuss with your family members to work with them to make a plan. That's under your personal control. Okay, the next is specific. About thoughts. Feelings and behaviors. Thinking, feeling, willing. Not just what am I going to do. Don't just go for the behaviors. What am I going to do? What am I going to think? How am I going to feel? So maybe it's, I am going to read one screen on my phone of teachings of Lord Chaitanya every day before lunch. That could be the behavior, specific behavior. It shouldn't be, I'm going to read Prabhupada's books more. No. I'm going to read one screen of teachings of Lord Chaitanya on my phone every day before lunch. I'm going to read one chapter of Krishna book, except for the very long one. Prayers by the personified ways. But other than that one, I'm going to read one chapter of Krishna book every night before I go to sleep. Okay? Whatever it may be. I'm going to polish my DD silver once a week. There's definitely a lot of people who need to do that from my stay at people's homes. I'm going to clean my altar once a week. Yeah, something. You know, I'm going to work on embroidering outfits for my deities. I'm going to spend at least 3 hours a month doing that because I love to do that. I'm going to add it to myself. So something specific, behavior, but you want to add thoughts and feelings. What am I going to be thinking? I'm going to be thinking, Krishna will like this nice shiny cup. And I'm going to be feeling happy that I can offer Krishna this shiny cup. So you want to have behavior, thoughts, and feelings, not just behavior. Specific behavior, specific feelings, and specific thoughts. Okay, next thing that I'm writing in the sky. Thank you. At least it didn't fall the other direction. That was just to wake up anybody who was sleeping. We planned that. Okay, next thing is going to be specific circumstances. So there may be some circumstances where you can't do it. If you're going to read a half an hour every day before dinner, there'll be a half an hour every day before dinner on Saturdays and Sundays, and 5 minutes before dinner on Monday through Fridays. So might be something you may have to adjust. Do everybody understand this?
Yeah.
You may have some specific circumstances. So maybe weekdays, you're going to have family sadhana in the evening, and weekends you're going to have it in the morning. So you know, you may adjust like that. And the last thing, very, very important, is harmony with your life. So this is, what is the cost? Assume there's a cost, otherwise you'd already be doing this. So ask yourself, what is the cost? Am I willing to pay it? If the cost of your plan is divorce or poverty, you probably shouldn't do that plan. Okay? So what is the cost? The cost may be I have to go to bed an hour earlier. The cost may be that I'm going to cook more simple meals. The cost may be that I don't keep up with my 3,172 friends on Facebook as well as I'd like to. You know, what is going to be the cost, and am I willing to pay? Okay, so we could all just, I'm going a few minutes over, which I apologize. Just 5 minutes on this, and then we will end it.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.